Good morning and welcome to the Communication Corner. I'm your weekly host, Dr. Bill Lampton, President of Championship Communication. It's great to join the WBCX family again. WBCX, you know, is the voice of Brunel. And great to join you, the listeners. I'm here in the Communication Corner every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., rebroadcasted at 6 a.m. I host the program because when you do it right, communication is one of your most powerful assets. It can save marriages, establish strong, lasting bonds with children, create and maintain friendships, increase sales, boost customer service, help you find a job and get promotions, become a leader in your profession, and serve your community. So I urge you, be with us every Tuesday in the Communication Corner at 9 a.m. and learn, as I do, from the terrific guests that I have selected because they're communication experts who are eager to share their tactics and strategies with us. When we go back a long way to some of the first teachers about communication, we can start with Aristotle. I remember decades ago when I was in graduate school at Ohio University reading Aristotle's classic book, The Rhetoric. In The Rhetoric, he talked about the three major modes of persuasion, the three major components of persuasion. One of them he called ethos, and we would translate that into ethics. Ethos would be where the speaker demonstrates character. It's the personal character of the speaker. Secondly, he pointed to logos, which we would translate as logic. Logos was proving truth by persuasive logic. And then third is pathos. Pathos has to do with emotion, stirring the emotions of the listeners. Well, today I can guarantee you that our guest is going to stir our emotions. Our guest is someone that I didn't have to give directions to as far as coming to the station this morning because she happens to be the general manager of WBCX. And also every week I have the privilege of working with her as she produces the Communication Corner. What's so special about Christina, that Christina Rhodes, that she would be our subject today and can motivate us so heavily? Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. Have you ever had a temporary infirmity, maybe from an accident or possibly surgery? Did you get a little different picture of what it would be like to lose some of your physical dexterity and mobility? I was talking not too long ago to a friend of mine in Atlanta who had a very severe accident. She fell down the stairs in her home. She wound up having very heavy surgery. Her recovery period was quite lengthy, and as a result, she had to spend a good bit of time in a wheelchair. As we talked about that, she said, "Bill, I learned there's a totally different world out there, because people looked at me differently when I would go into a mall, into a department store, into an office building. In fact, some of them would not even look at me in a wheelchair because they thought that it was something they didn't know how to handle. They were uncomfortable with it." Christina Rhodes has been in a wheelchair, as she will describe to us, all of her life, practically. She'll be 27 years old soon, so she has plenty of experience to talk with us about that. And yet, what's Christina's motto, as she puts it on LinkedIn? Her motto: happiness is yours to choose or reject, so embrace it. Sing out loud, give somebody a hug, smile for me, and don't forget to dance to the music. Those of us who have the privilege of knowing Christina Rhodes would say she absolutely has a 100,000-watt smile. She lights up any room that she enters. She has the wonderful nickname as Hot Wheels. She's got zest. She's got fervor. She's got an upbeat spirit. And Let me tell you a little bit about her background. Christina currently holds the position of general manager of Brunel University's radio station, 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brunel. She recently received her Master's of Science in Organizational Leadership. She's also the chairperson of Brunel University's Media Board. One of her biggest accomplishments was being crowned Miss Wheelchair California 2005. She had the opportunity to meet many amazing people and to travel her home state to spread awareness, inspiration, motivation, and smiles through a positive attitude. So it's a great pleasure for me to welcome today into the Communication Corner, no stranger to WBCX, Christina Rhodes. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks so much for having me this morning.
Wonderful privilege for all of us. Let's begin at the beginning. For a child with a disability that is going to be a permanent disability, family support is so vital. It's a key to making the best of your life. So let's start by having you describe to us, please, Christina, how your family helped you understand your situation and keep your spirits high throughout childhood, adolescence, and college.
Bill, I am so, so blessed to have such an awesome, wonderful, supportive family. They always encouraged me, my mom, aunts and uncles, grandparents, my dad, to do anything I dreamed of. So obviously, as I, you know, grew up a little bit, I can't even remember an exact moment that I knew that there was a physical disability. It's pretty obvious, you know, when I got to be around other kids and other people. But it never was expressed that way in my family. It was just my life. This is something that I'm dealing with, not disability, when the definition of the word is without ability. It was just who I was, and I could make the choice to live to the best of it and make the best of the abilities that I do have or not. And so my family just always expressed that idea that I wasn't fragile or, like I said, without ability, but that I could do anything I put my mind to. They believed in me and continued to do so throughout my life, throughout my school years and then into college. And even now in my adult life, they give me the strength and the motivation to be who I am, and taught me, it's a term that I actually learned here in my master's program, Bill, self-efficacy, that when I heard the definition of this term, it just rang so true, to believe and in the conviction of one's own abilities. And so they taught me that to know deep within my heart that I can do anything that I put my mind to. And just kind of an example of how they instilled those ideas in me. I got injured when I was 10 months old from an accident, so I don't remember anything. As far as I know, this is the way I've always been. But when I was a year and a half, my mom entered me into one of those mommy baby swimming classes. And there was steps going down to this pool, so every day she'd walk me in on her hip, and not in the wheelchair or the stroller that I was using at the time, and do the swimming classes with me. And it wasn't until the last day, when I won the award for being the best baby swimmer, that she told the rest of the class that I couldn't use my legs. And so that's just kind of an example, a metaphor, as to how they treated me, that let me do everything I could possibly do and see what my abilities were before they even recognize the limitations.
There were really two choices that your family had. One was to keep telling you, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do that. That's mm-hmm. for the other children. And the other choice was to take the one that they did and was to open up the possibilities of what, with determination and with their assistance and encouragement, you could do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I had two older uncles too, Bill. They were 14 when I was born, and they're identical twins and big tough guys, over 6 foot tall, and one's an ex-Marine and one works for the terrorist unit in LA. They're tough guys, I'm telling you.
Sounds like it.
And like I said, 14 when I was born. So they helped to make me tough. There was never a bully that I ever encountered that could dish out more than my uncles prepared me for at a young age. And I knew they loved me more than anything in the world, but they would tease me. They would push my limits physically in the water and in different places to see make me reach inside and pull out the most that I could be. So I attribute a lot of that to them too. Like I said, my whole family, very thankful.
I love this statement that you made. I consider myself the luckiest girl in the world to have all these people who loved me so much in my life. Well, I have to ask, Christina, from your experience, are other people who are put in the category of disabled, how many of them are that blessed? Or is your case quite rare? Do you know?
You know, I'm not sure. I think with a disability or not, some people are blessed to have a supportive family. Kids growing up, there are certain parents that focus more on limitations and be careful, and I don't know if you should do that, and watch out. And other parents give you the tools that you need to reach for the stars, I guess you could say. So I'm one of the people that was blessed to have a supportive family, that whether I would have had a disability or not, they would have raised me to be a great person.
You're right. That's vital, whether we have any physical limitations or we don't, because the parents' support, encouragement, guiding us, upholding us, setting examples for us, that's vital, whatever our physical condition. Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to the language you prefer used when someone is talking about your condition. You've talked about disabled. There's something distasteful about that because it says not abled. Some people might say lame. Some people might say paralyzed. Some people might say crippled. What words like that do you respond positively to, and which ones negatively? How do you like to be referred to?
Bo, as we're talking today, I want to remind everybody to keep in mind, I have a very laid-back personality, so not too much ruffles my feathers. It's also a decision that I feel like I make constantly, that I could let things bother me, or I could choose to educate. If somebody uses the word crippled, which to me doesn't sound like the best thing. I mean, it sure is not a compliment, but I feel like that they're using that word because they don't know any different. That's the word at some point in their life that somebody told them to use.
That's their vocabulary.
Absolutely. So I try to use language when I'm talking to them. Disability, again, although it has a negative connotation, you know, that's kind of what the standard is. Other people say handicapped, physically challenged. You know, there's a variety of things. And particularly, or for myself, nothing particularly bothers me. Again, I just feel like it's about how you respond to people and educating them if they say something that doesn't make you feel so good.
And what's most important is not what other people say about you or think about you. It's what you say to yourself and
sure.
What you think about yourself.
Absolutely.
I was rather overcome by reading some articles about you, which you shared with me through the internet. And here's another quote from you that grabbed my attention and my full respect. You say, "I know that I was chosen to sit in this wheelchair and educate and inspire everyone I meet." So, Christina, how long have you felt this sense of destiny and mission and purpose in your situation?
Bill, I've always known that my condition, me being in a wheelchair, wasn't a sad or unfortunate thing. It just was. That's the way I am. And again, going back to, I knew I could make a choice. At a young age, I recognized that I could make a choice to be sad and be angry and upset at the situation I was in, or be happy and enjoy life. And so I chose to be happy. And also at a young age, I began seeing that attitude inspired people. So people would see that even with some challenges that I face, that I choose to be happy. And that made me feel better, that they got inspired. So in the last few years, I've talked with a life coach and some other people, and I've just really come to the result that I am supposed to be this way, that I believe that my attitude that I use to hopefully make people feel better and hopefully appreciate what they have and the good in their life, that it may not be as easy to spread or to inspire if there wasn't some kind of physical difference to get people's attention. Okay, so I think there's so many people in this world that have positive attitudes and help others and do the best they can to live their best life. But if they blend in with the crowd, they may not be as easy to recognize. So this physical difference that kind of gets people's attention allows me to share my attitude. So I just feel like that sure is not a sad or unfortunate thing, and that it feels meant to be. You know, I don't know in what context that happened, if it was chosen by a higher power or if it's a decision my soul was allowed to make before it entered my body. You know, I don't know how it works, but I believe that it was supposed to be this way because I'm so comfortable.
So there have been no prolonged periods in your life when you had self-pity or bitterness or blaming the universe?
No. The summer that I was 13, turning 14, I spent it in Shriners Hospital and had a spinal fusion, which is a pretty intense surgery, especially for a kid. And they had to put metal rods in my back from pretty much the base of my spine all the way up to really the base of my neck. So my entire back, so I can only bend at the hips and the neck, because I had grown up without the muscles to be able to sit up straight. So they needed to straighten my spine out. And that was definitely a challenging summer for me because of the actual physical pain that I was in. And that causes a lot of stress. And my mom was there with me, and she had to go through a lot to stand by my side. And 2 weeks into my stay, I got a staph infection. They had to do the entire surgery over again. So this is a 9-hour surgery that they had to bring me back in and start over. And I ended up being in the hospital for close to 3 months. And so coming home from that, I remember that being challenging because that was the first time I spent a significant amount of time with other people in wheelchairs. So there was a bunch of other teenagers there that shared my exact disability. So there was an understanding that I'd never experienced before. So coming home from that, and it happened to be my freshman year of high school. So coming home and being thrust into my freshman year, which you're not the most confident person at that age anyway. I remember that being challenging, but I worked through it. And again, with the support of my family and friends, I was okay. But even then, I don't believe there was any pity. It was just being at a difficult age anyway, and I'm transitioning from some different experiences.
Thank you for sharing that with us. In case you're just joining us and you're wondering who is giving all these inspirational comments, I'm Bill Lampton. Dr. Bill Lampton, host of the Communication Corner, WBCX 89.1 FM on your dial. And my guest today is Christina Rhodes. We'll get to this in a minute. That she was Miss Wheelchair California in 2005. Christina, we've talked about your family support, which was so vital from an early stage and all through continuing on your life. There's some other people and entities who support you. Let's describe this character, Chevy. Who's this guy, Chevy?
Listeners of WBCX may have heard Chevy in the past. He's my wonderful companion dog. He's a 95-pound Dutch Shepherd, and he's been with me for 8 years. I got him when he was 7 weeks old, and then Chevy and I went to training together. I tell people that I think I learned more than he did. As soon as I learned how to talk to him and interact with him, he caught right on and did just about anything I asked. So, but like I said, he's been with me for 8 years, goes everywhere I go to work every day, has received a couple honorary degrees from Brunel University for all the time he spent in the classroom. He goes on airplanes to restaurants everywhere I go. And the primary reason that I got Chevy is because I use a manual wheelchair. And when I started college and started having to push around a big campus, I started noticing it in my shoulders, because shoulders kind of like pitchers from pitching. They get the problem in the rotator cuff, and shoulders were not made to push a wheelchair, especially for as long as I've been doing it. So I would wake up with shoulder pain, and they wanted me to get a powered wheelchair. And I was fighting them, fighting the doctors, and saying, no way. Too many of my friends don't have an option, you know, to have the independence that I do, and I don't want to give it up. So they said, well, you could get a dog to pull you. I said, that's more my style. So I went and got Chev, and we've spent 8 wonderful years together. And I tell you what, I think he's kind of the unofficial mascot around here at Brunau. We should get him a little tiger suit to dress him up in. But everybody loves him, and if anybody in the building or on campus is having a bad day, they come down and get on the ground and love on Chevy a little bit.
Well, one thing I'll say about Chevy, he attends every broadcast of the Communication Corner when you are producing the program for me. And Chevy is a wonderful member of the audience. He doesn't applaud, I'll have to say that, but he also doesn't make any noise. Chevy just lies there and takes it all in very calmly. Now, Christina, in addition to your family and Chevy, your extended family that you've mentioned, there's a young man named Jacob who gives you some vital support. Tell us about Jacob, please.
Bill, Jacob's my husband. And this past June, we had been married for 2 years, but we've known each other since we were 10 years old. So Jacob's been a part of my life for a long time. He's my best friend. We grew up knowing each other through school, through elementary and middle school. But from our freshman year of high school on, we've been just best friends. So we ran together in the same crowd all through high school, and then moved in together just as roommates after high school and college. And I think I was 20 years old when he, and he's just a couple months older than me, 20 years old when he decided to move to Houston for a year. We were in Northern California, and go to UTI. And I panicked. I'd had boyfriends, he had girlfriends, you know, throughout the years, and but when he was going to move away, I realized, I don't know if I can be without you. So we were able to make it the whole over a year that he was in Houston. When he got back, we moved in together, and not too long, about a year and a half after that, my parents moved out to Georgia, and I didn't make it long being away from my mom, and he came out with me. And our first Christmas in our house, he proposed. So I don't know what I would do without him, Bill. He is a huge, huge part of my life, the best partner I could ever ask for. We have so much fun together, and I don't know, when he goes out of town for work, I realize how difficult my life is without him. So.
Well, you and I have that in common. I married my high school sweetheart, a young lady from the same hometown. I was 17. She was 14 when we started dating, so I can identify with what you're talking about. We've talked a little bit about your being a swimmer at a very early age and even won the swimming contest. You surprised plenty of people with your outdoor, vigorous, active life. Tell us a little bit about your love of the outdoors, and for gosh sakes, I read you even work on cars.
Yes, Bill, I love the outdoors. I just feel so invigorated and connected when I'm out in nature and enjoying just where we naturally came from. I love to swim and go in the mountains. I did my first 5K recently. I wakeboard, and I enjoy being outside and active so much, and just enjoying the beauty that is in this world, because there's so much of it, and just what's actually here and what's natural is just, I'd love to be out there and enjoy it. And yeah, I even work on cars a little bit. I have to admit, in the last couple years, I haven't as much. I've been a little busy, but in high school, I'd get out there and change my own tire. And I remember one time in the snow, my engine flooded in my little S10, and I had to climb up in the engine by myself and stick a screwdriver in the carburetor to fix my engine up so I could get it started and get out of there. Again, I was blessed to be surrounded by people that encouraged me to push my limits and see what I could accomplish. So I was always giving everything a try when I was younger, riding four-wheelers and playing sports and being out there and getting the most out of this life that has so much to offer.
Tell us how you got the nickname Hot Wheels.
You know, some kids started calling me that in high school. and it kind of stuck with me. Some friends of the family also, and it kind of spread. And then when I was 17, I got my pickup truck. And if any of you have seen it, it's a red truck with flames on it. So that, if there was any question what my nickname was, that kind of drove the point home. And so I've gone by the nickname Hot Wheels since about high school.
A very affectionate, complimentary name.
Absolutely.
In coping with your condition, have there been, Christina, any role models for you? Certainly, I know already that you are a role model for many, many people, whether they are in a wheelchair or whether they're not. You're a wonderful role model. Are there any role models who gave you special inspiration by what they did and said?
You know, my mom, number one, she's just the greatest. And apart from teaching me some of the things that I've mentioned today, apart from teaching me to love life and to be the best I could be and to reach for the stars and to appreciate what I have and to be proud of who I am and where I came from. Those are all great qualities, but also because she went through a lot raising me. It's not an easy task to raise a child with any kind of disability, and mine was a physical disability, so there's lots of parts and pieces and accessories that come with that. So it wasn't an easy task, and she did it as a single parent until I was 7, and we were able to meet my dad, who is now and since has been my dad. But she had so much strength and made it through everything with a smile and taught me through it all to be thankful. So she's my greatest role model and just my hero. I mentioned my family, my grandpa and some other people in my family had a lot of professional, I learned from professionally broadcast media. My family's into broadcast media. And then recently, just in the past year or so, I've got to meet a person that there's Chev. He shook off a little bit. A man named David Lega, I've got to meet in my travels in the past few months. And he's just an extraordinary man. He also has a disability. He was born with it, and I'm not sure it's one of those long and complicated names, but his arms are completely paralyzed. And so he does everything with his feet. He's a gold medal winning Paralympian swimmer and does it all kicking with his legs. And, as I mentioned, he's from Sweden and is an internationally renowned public speaker and has been recognized as the young leader of the world. And his accomplishments just dazzle me. I just think it's so, so wonderful to see his positive attitude. And to me, that's kind of what I go back to, is people that overcome challenges with a good attitude and try to show, a good story from the things that they've experienced. So,
talking with Christina Rhodes. We're going to come back in a minute on the Communication Corner. And when we come back in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to her about the Miss Wheelchair pageants, how that got started, talk about her time as Miss Wheelchair California. Most interesting. Stay with us.
Over 30 years of quality music and programming, WBCX 89.1, the voice of Brunel.
Extraordinary lives from Brunel University.
I had everything going for me, a husband, a child, and a job I loved. And then things just fell apart. I got divorced, and suddenly my job as a teacher's assistant could no longer pay the bills. It was a terrible blow, but I didn't feel self-pity. Only this overwhelming sense that this was my life, and I wanted to make it the best life I could for me and my son. So I went back to school and enrolled in Brunel University. At Brunel, I found classrooms full of people just like me, motivated adults who wanted to better their careers and their lives. In 1 year, I'll be a licensed school teacher with my own first grade classroom. Life can knock you down, but you can change that life. At Brunel University, you can make your life extraordinary.
Now with 2 Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online, register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brunel University, extraordinary lives.
Hi, I am Ricardo Boyer, host of Embracing Health. Every Friday at noon, we talk about various topics related to your health and well-being, empowering you to make positive changes in your life. So, join me Fridays at noon here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Bernal.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can motivate your audience.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can teach your children.
I can boost your bottom line.
I can add value to your workplace.
I could be a loyal and productive employee.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
If you don't recognize my talents and ability.
If you don't hire me.
If you don't have an open mind and a workplace that's open to everyone.
If you don't realize that America works best when everybody works.
What can you do?
What can you do?
What can you do?
You can remember that it works.
It's what people can do.
It's what people can do that matters.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Sean Miller here. Be sure to join me every Sunday for music from artists like EST, Gold Rap. Randy Crawford, Rio de Janeiro Blue.
Rio de Janeiro Blue.
Moderico, Solar Igniter. That's Jazz Pulse every Sunday evening, 6 to 10 p.m. right here on Bernal University's 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Bernal.
This is a public service announcement.
Celebrate and encourage ordinary people to accomplish great things through service. Find a volunteer opportunity near you at 211uwch.com.
My name is Jamali Rashears. With my local United Way, I help promote academic achievement and give kids a reason to stay in school. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Gail Dunn, and I'd like to invite you to join me on Garage Gab every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. On Garage Gab, we'll find a way to help you solve your car dilemmas and save you money. Again, that's 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings here on The Voice of Bernal.
Senior Issues is a radio show devoted to promoting quality issues to help our seniors maintain or improve their quality of life. Also, the show could help those with seniors in their family be aware of the various issues that would affect both them and their loved ones. Showtime is 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Thursday, and yes, we are live. We will cover a wide range of subjects over the course of time. If you have a subject that you would like discussed, or if you know of an event that our listening audience should be aware of, call me at 770-380-9727. This is Charles White, Certified Senior Advisor. I hope that we can add you to our listening audience.
Hello, welcome back to the second segment of the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, talking with Christina Rhodes. Christina, I said right before the break that we were going to explore what the Miss Wheelchair pageants are all about that started in 1972. What was the purpose of the Miss Wheelchair pageants, both then and now?
So I brought just a short sentence for the mission statement of Miss Wheelchair America. Its mission is to provide an opportunity of achievement for women who happen to be wheelchair users to successfully educate and advocate for the more than 52 million Americans living with disabilities. So it's very clearly, and I'm not sure how it's changed over the years. I know how it's been since 2005 when I was involved, but it's not a beauty pageant. It's an advocacy program to, like it said, be able to stand up for the rights and for be a voice for people with disabilities in the state that you're representing and then on a national level if you were chosen for the national title holder.
But I suppose like most pageants, you go through an interview stage, several interview stages, and voting by judges and that type of
thing. Each state does it a little bit differently. They choose how to select their title holder. So there may be a big event with different different things that you have to participate in. Mine was a pretty in-depth application and an essay and then an interview by three judges. So, you know, my uncles joked, like, is there going to be a bikini contest or what? And it's not that kind of, you know, beauty contest. And so
a guy would ask that, wouldn't he? Well, as Miss Wheelchair California, reading one of the articles about you while you held your reign for 2005, I got amused and also a little bit educated about how you became something of a political activist. Tell us a little bit about who was Tim Leslie and how did lunch with Tim Leslie one day change his attitudes about disabled Californians?
Tim Leslie was a representative from the county that I lived in California while I held the title of Miss Wheelchair California. And he didn't have a very good record or reputation in the disability community, constantly fighting with different advocates and activists in the disability community. And he was proposing a bill, had helped written a bill that would, many people in the community felt, would limit our access in California to public buildings. And there are some laws there that allow businesses to actually be sued if their facility isn't wheelchair accessible. And this was going to kind of limit the ability for us to enforce that in California. And so there was a lot of people very worried about it, but told me that I would have no luck in talking to Representative Leslie because he hated us.
Well, just for curiosity, was he trying to gain the business vote by doing that because he was saving them dollars?
You know what, Bill? That's exactly the question that I asked. Because I'm a bit of an optimist, but I like to believe that people are doing the best that they can. And I know that there's, you know, corruption and other things, negative people in the world. But I wanted to hear from him why he's doing it. I couldn't imagine that he was doing it to make the disabled people mad in California. So we went out to lunch and were able to finally find a table that worked for us. And I started by asking him about himself, about what he enjoyed in life, about his family, about what he did when he wasn't representing our state. So he talked to me about some of his personal life, and then I talked to him about mine. I told him about Jacob and about where we lived up in Rockland, and I love California, and some of my experiences as the state title holder. And it wasn't until the end of the lunch when I said, if you don't mind me asking, I'd love to hear why you're proposing the bill that we're here to talk about today. And I could feel the tension at the beginning of the meeting, that his experience had been a negative one for the kind of meeting that we were about to have. And he felt a lot looser by the end after we'd just been talking about things in common that we both had in common because we're human beings, regardless of any disability or not. And so I asked him, and he explained to me the reasons why he was doing it, and it was to protect businesses. And he had his reasons that made a lot of sense. And I explained to him what my fears were and what some of the fears from my community were. And I didn't ask him to do anything. I didn't ask him to change anything. I just said that I thought he'd want to hear from everybody that he represents, you know, how we feel about the bill. And I was happy to hear his side. So we left and went home and didn't hear from him for a while. And I think a couple weeks later, I got a letter in the mail that said that he had withdrawn his name from the bill and wasn't going to support it anymore, and that they wanted to nominate me from their county as Woman of the Year for their county in California. And so I was very honored, and I just reinforced to me what a positive attitude can do, and not approaching situations with anger and defensive, but just seeing where another person is coming from and educating them a little bit.
And there's a wonderful general communication lesson here, and that lesson is, if you have a conflict with somebody, don't attack. Instead, try to get to know them as a person and open yourself so they can get to know you as a person, as you and Tim did, and that often can resolve a lot of conflict right there. As I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong on that, but it seems to me in reading about that, one of the incidents that day that really impressed him was that you had to go to about three restaurants before you found one that was accessible for you. Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, there was a couple. I think it was, may have been the second restaurant that we tried, but even just finding a table that worked, we wanted to sit outside, outside of the Capitol in Sacramento, and it was difficult to find and difficult for me to even find a place that I could park to be able to meet him. So he got to see firsthand a few of the challenges, and especially to accessibility, which is what the topic of our conversation was.
So before even a word was spoken, there was some some nonverbal messages there,
yeah,
that came across. I mean, he did see what he hadn't seen before, that these obstacles, these handicaps, this lack of access is real,
yeah,
and it impacts individuals very much like his lunch guest that day. Well, you know, when you were Miss Wheelchair California, 2005, you visited a good number of hospitals in your role. Tell us, please, what impact did that have on you? What type of patients did you see? What message did you bring to them?
Bill, that was one of my favorite experiences as Miss Wheelchair California, because as I mentioned earlier, I'm a Shriners kid. So from, I think, when I was about 12, 13 on until you're 21, that's when you're an adult, so you're not allowed to go to Shriners anymore, I was able to participate in the Shriners system. And they did my surgeries and some different things that I had to go through. And I made a lot of really close friends at that hospital growing up. And the experiences that I had there were great ones. So being able to go back and see some of the people that I knew that still worked there and interact with the patients, and I could see in their eyes this excitement because they saw the potential of what their opportunities were, what they could be if they put their mind to it. And especially the girls coming in with a sash and crown on and all dolled up, they thought, oh my gosh, I can be a princess? Absolutely, yes you can. So that was very, very special, just reaching out to those kids and giving back to that community a little bit.
Just a reminder that our main focus today is motivation, which, as Aristotle said, is one of the three strongest components of communication. And we have a terrific example of motivation for us here. Christina, isn't it interesting that if a person has a condition which some others would call limiting, and they could get possibly depressed and down about that, one of the best ways to cure that is to do what you have done so often and you did as Miss Wheelchair California, and that's go take care of other people.
Absolutely. You start realizing being around other people with disabilities, different kinds of disabilities, you start realizing how easy, for lack of a better word, your disability is because you're used to it. You know how to deal with it. That doesn't mean it's easy in the sense to everybody, but it's comfortable. You know how, and you know what your challenges are, and you know how to face those challenges. Being around other people with different disabilities, you get to see that yours is nothing compared to what other people have to deal with, and seeing their challenges, it's really inspirational. And, you know, other people like that inspire me as much as you say I inspire you. So
the easiest way maybe to forget your own problems is to concentrate on other people's problems.
Yeah.
We just celebrated last week, I happened to notice it, we just celebrated the 20th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. What has that act accomplished in 20 years? What remains to be done, in your opinion?
Bill, we should be, I believe, so proud as Americans to have the Americans with Disabilities Act. What the intent of the law is to prohibit discrimination of people with disabilities. And there are several titles included in the law that focus on a few different areas: employment, public entities, so transportation, public accommodations, which is accessibility in commercial facilities, and telecommunications, and then there's some miscellaneous clauses there as well. And so if you can see all the areas that that has had an impact, it's by no means perfect. There are still lots of stereotypes and barriers to break down, but it has made so much difference in the past 20 years. A simple thing we take for granted today, like a curb cut, you know, in a sidewalk, so you can get from the street to the sidewalk or cross a street. We may take for advantage, you know, take advantage of that today when those were not always there. So small changes like that, I've mentioned that I'm an optimist. So I like to focus on the wonderful things that it has brought to our community. Helping with employment. An employee can't be discriminated against because they have a disability or a potential employee. And so I think that it's made such a difference in the past 20 years, but like I said, there's always more work to do. We can always do better. And I think it's all in education and teaching people what areas we still need to try to enforce better. Like I said, a lot of it has to do with just stereotypes and mental barriers that people have that we have to work on a little bit.
And you and some of our conversations you and I've had, Christina, I thought that maybe some of the most amusing experiences that you have had, that you've shared with me, are the strange, weird, unpredictable comments that people will make to you, even strangers make to you. What would some of those be?
Oh, gosh, you would just be blown away. Again, I'm unique in the sense that I don't let those things bother me. I just think, my goodness, the kind of experiences that that person had must have been very different for them to talk like this. But, I mean, anything you can think of, from just coming up, you know, strangers coming up and asking how I got hurt or why I'm in a wheelchair, which, you know, that's something that happens every day. But not everybody would do that, walk up to a stranger and ask something like that. Other people will...
Do you consider that they're interested? Are they nosy? Which?
Both. Mm-hmm. You know, either way, I don't really mind. They're curious. Gosh, I can't blame them. You know, when I see somebody with a disability that is different from mine, I'm curious what the deal is with them. So I don't blame people for that. Some people don't like it, though. Some people are not... Maybe one, not comfortable with their disability, or two, don't like talking about how it happened. It's painful for some reason, or they still struggle with pain. And so some people don't like it. So I would advise not to just walk up to anybody and ask, what's wrong with you? Because other people say, that's like me asking, you know, why do you have gray hair? Or why are you overweight? And it's like, yeah.
Why have you got acne?
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't mind. I feel like people are much more comfortable around me after they've gotten that off their chest. If they're a curious person, gosh, they can't help that they're a curious person. So I'd rather satisfy their curiosity and answer what they want to know. And they're much more comfortable with me after that.
Please share with us a story about the beggar in New York City.
Yes, yes. So I was saying, people will ask, strangers will come up to me and say, how'd you get hurt? And I'll tell them, and then they'll say, gosh, how do you go to the bathroom? And oh, goodness. You know, like, okay. So it's so surprising all the time. It never ceases to amaze me, even after all these years. But a couple years ago, I was in New York City with my family, and I'm always the person that likes to talk to strangers and will entertain them if they have questions for me. We went by, and there was a homeless gentleman playing a guitar on the side of the street. And I'm the one that will stop and I'm the one that will stop and listen and throw a couple dollars in. And, you know, to me, he's playing music. Other people are just doing nothing. So at least he's using his talent. So I'll listen for a little while. I threw my dollars in, finished his song, and said, wow, you know, gave me the kind of, what's wrong with you? You look much too healthy to be in a wheelchair. And I said, I know, I'm a rebel. You know, what can I say? And he says, oh, well, if you don't mind me asking, what happened? And I got injured when I was 10 months old. And he says, oh, gosh, well, then you must not believe in God. I said, yeah, yes, I do. I believe in God. And he said, well, not really, or he would have healed you. You know, you would be walking today. I thought, well, I am taking my dollar back because you are a homeless guy and, you know, why are you on the street? Maybe you guys should work on your relationship a little bit. So, you know, it's interesting, but I thought, oh, what the heck? You know, for some reason that was what he believed, so I can't blame him.
You also shared with me what happens when children come and talk to you. Children are very frank. They are never reticent about asking questions, and so you described your reaction when children come and want to talk with you and how you deal with them and how you deal with their parents. What's that?
I love kids because they're not scared to say anything. You know, in them running up to me in the supermarket and asking, what happened to you or why do you use that thing? They also are not judging at all when an adult maybe won't say that those things out loud, but they're thinking, oh gosh, you know, bless her heart, she's in a wheelchair. And kids just are really curious. They're not judging. They don't, you know, they're not sad for you. They just want to know why.
Well, they could be asking somebody, why have you got a black eye?
Sure. They just want to know why. And so their parents' reaction is pretty funny because they'll, you know, about pass out and jerk their children out of the aisle and say, I'm so sorry. Get out of her way. I'll say, number one, I promise not to run them over. And number two, I would rather them ask me anything they could think of. Children are so impressionable. They remember things. So if they meet me, a person in a wheelchair that's got an obvious physical disability, and I'm happy and I gladly answer their questions and satisfy their curiosity, then I bet you that their attitude towards people with disabilities will be different. On the other hand, if I bite their head off and say, don't talk to me or don't ask me questions like that, they will associate somebody with a disability to somebody that's negative and unhappy and maybe even embarrassed of who they are. So I got to tell the parents, it's okay. It's okay. You know, let them ask what they want to ask, and you might learn something as well.
And what you convince them of really is, hey, folks, this is not a sideshow.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is just life.
Yep.
It's an ordinary part of life for many people. In fact, how many disabled people are in the United States? You mentioned the number to me.
Yeah, it's right around 54 million.
That's astonishing.
Yep.
That's an astonishing number. I know that you get inspiration by your frequent association with other people who are in wheelchairs. In fact, over the last couple of weeks, I know you've been to Washington, D.C., you've been to Chicago, and on Facebook, I see these magnificent pictures of you with friends in wheelchairs. You're all smiling and laughing. You're glad-handing each other. One of the things I'm sure that some people try to say to you, Christina, is, well, I really understand your situation. However, with a little judgment, most of us know that the only person who can understand your situation is somebody who shares it. So tell us a little bit, please, about what benefit you get from these types of associations.
That's funny, Bill. My mom and I have lots of inside jokes because of the things we've experienced over the years. But one of them is, oh my gosh, you're in a wheelchair. That's so funny. My mom's sister's brother's niece is also in a wheelchair, so I totally know how it is. We'll say, oh, okay, good. You know, so we have something in common. But being around other people in wheelchairs, spinal cord injuries specifically, we understand each other. And there's no questions that we have to explain. We understand all of each other's challenges. We understand where it gets difficult and where we're able to inspire other people together. The two companies that I'm able to work for and be a spokesmodel for are about redefining those stereotypes. So they're two companies that are about creating something unique, wheelchairs, clothing for people in wheelchairs to express their personalities and not be defined by the things that they have to use. So being around like-minded people like that, that enjoy life, that like to be active, that like to push the limits a little bit, and understand that we have a special gift here in being able to inspire other people, it's really special to get to share that experience with them.
I'm sure it is. Let's talk for a minute about radio. You said that some of your relatives had had a background in broadcasting and that drew you to broadcasting. You've been associated with WBCX for your entire time here at Brenau. You have very much what I would call, and I do a lot of speech coaching. I'm a former speech professor at a university. I would say that you have wonderful non-dialect diction, so you're perfect for radio.
Thank you.
Tell me, what is it that attracted you and keeps you attracted to radio, and in what ways do you plan on continuing to expand your radio career?
Well, like you mentioned, Bill, my family has been involved with broadcast since long before I was born. My grandpa and mom and aunts and uncles were in television broadcast for many, many years. And then my mom was licensed as the sixth female radio engineer in the country. And so she had a lot of experience in radio broadcasting. And I knew it was something that I really enjoyed. I've always loved music. I've always been an avid radio listener, somebody that would call in and really get to know the DJs and be a part of what was going on at the local radio stations. And I moved out here, as I mentioned, in 2006 and had gotten my AA, but wanted to continue my degree and came and toured the mass communication department here at Brenau University, and I saw the radio station, and immediately it just felt like home. It felt like the place that I needed to be, and so I signed up and started attending school here. And my first semester, like you also mentioned, I began in a class doing my own radio show, and I volunteered at kept doing that as a volunteer for the next couple years, and then became the operations director and then the general manager. So I love WBCX and the family here and all the people that are involved. And I'm not sure what capacity I'll be involved in radio in the future, but I would definitely like to continue. But there's lots of things that are going to happen in my life, so I'm not sure how to what capacity.
You have a program, as I remember, on Wednesday mornings, maybe, called The Positive Perspective. What's that about? I guess it's the title describes it well.
Yeah, just myself and the student station manager, Jaleesa White, and one of our other volunteer community DJs, Debbie Westenfrom, we co-host the show together and bring inspirational news and positive attitudes and just a bright perspective to help people get their day started off right. And there's plenty of other people covering all the bad news that's happening in the world. So we try to flip those events a little bit and show people the good that's happening in this world. And then I also do a music show on Monday afternoons from 3 to 5 called The Ocean Breeze. I play beach music, all kinds of beach music, and that makes me think of home.
Ah, yes. Christina, this has been a most inspiring, wonderful, uplifting interview. And after spending an hour talking with you and our listeners having an hour listening to your deep thoughts about life and optimism, I know many will want to contact you. What's the best appropriate contact information, please?
Okay, they can email me here at Brenau at krhoades, that's krhoades at brenau.edu, and Brenau is spelled B-R-E-N-A-U.
I'm going to be posting this on my blog, thecompletecommunicator.com. There will be a link to the audio there. Reminding you again of Christina's motto, happiness is yours to choose or reject, so embrace it. Sing out loud, give somebody a hug, smile for me, and don't forget to dance to the music. In closing, I will share, of course, my contact information, because I love to hear from listeners to the Communication Corner, my website, championshipcommunication.com, my blog, thecompletecommunicator.com, and my phone number, 678-316-4300. Be with us next week. Our guest, another guest with remarkable communication gifts, Justin Hahnemann. He's a marketing executive with Coca-Cola and an expert on branding for entrepreneurs. Plus, He has written and produced two music albums in addition to his book, Make It Happen, Live Out Your Personal Brand. You want to be with us? 9 a.m. next Tuesday. Until then, follow Christina Rhodes' inspiring example and live every minute gratefully, gracefully, and creatively, no matter what has happened in your life. Thank you so much for being with us today in the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton.